Welcome to Audible Insights, brought to you by the Insights Association, the leading voice, resource, and network of the marketing research and analytics community. With our host, Paul Kirch, research industry veteran and business leader, and our amazing guest lineup, we'll uncover actionable insights and creative new ideas that you can apply to your own business so you can stand out from the competition. Here's Paul Kirch.
Today on Audible Insights, I'm excited to bring you Mona Patel. She's the CEO of Motivate Design. She's a UX expert, a professor, a speaker, and author. And we're going to be diving in and talking about the impact UX is having on the world today. Let's welcome Mona Patel to the show. Mona Patel, welcome to Audible Insights.
Thank you, Paul.
Hey, we're super excited to have you on. You're a new member to the Insights Association, so welcome. We're really honored to have you as a part of this.
Thank you.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about your journey and some of the things you're doing. I actually have a digital marketing agency, so we put a lot of emphasis in user interface and user experience when it comes to websites. And user experience is a term that often gets thrown around, but I think so many people out there don't really understand what can really be accomplished and how you're able to really help a client or help somebody move their business forward by creating a better experience for their customers. So talk a little bit about how you got into user experience and what that represents for you.
Absolutely. I would love to. So, you know, I got very lucky. In college, I found a degree called engineering psychology and human factors. And so it's a field that's all around the behavior and cognition, a study of that, and then how you apply it to the design of products. And at that time, when I graduated, it was a lot of physical space design or product design. And then as the web took off and software took off, a lot of us human factors people moved over and started doing work around how do you make interfaces very easy to use so that people know where to go and how to interact with it. And I from the very beginning, I just have found this so fascinating that you could sit down with a set of people and get into their heads and get into their lives and really understand what they were looking for, where there's a particular need, and then translate that for a business. And I was pretty much hooked since 99 on that. It's that translation that I think is so important, which is not just hearing what people need, but helping clients see the value of fulfilling that need. And I've just been pumped to do it ever since.
So social media obviously has come a long way since you got started and also I got started in business.
Yeah.
How much influence is social media and other forms of, I guess, social interaction influence in the user experience industry?
The industry, so there's so many angles I could take on that answer. And a funny one is my personal journey on it. But in terms of the impact that it has, it's a lot of what we're talking about when we look at the customer experience is not just an individual customer, but the impact a group or a community has on that customer. So, for example, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning about bed sheets, you know, and how she found the best bed sheets ever. And social media is another example of how that kind of conversation is happening real time all the time and influencing my behavior and my decision making. And so where before social media, when we would do a lot of this work, actually before internet, if I really want to date myself, it would be a lot of what do you know? What would you think? Now it's very much looking at the cohesive 360 customer experience, including the impact that people have on a decision and on a desire to make an action. I thought where you were going to go with it is how social media has impacted business. And I think that's been really funny with being an author and then, you know, obviously speaking, just being able to influence more people and have your word reach more people, I think has been really beneficial to the UX community. And it's been our ability to showcase the value of working with us as user experience professionals has really been helped, I think, by social media.
Yeah, and it seems like the way that information travels today, trends change quickly, they morph quickly, and it seems like that's also an area that would really impact the user experience community.
Exactly. I mean, the patterns, the pattern libraries, best practices, standards, new ideas, where navigation is going, you know, how Alexa has changed the way we think about voice, all of that is just being talked about constantly, really, on many social media channels, especially if you include Medium and things like that.
Yeah, so that really drives this question to the point where our Insights Association really focuses on a lot of people, obviously, in the market research space. And yeah, it seems like user experience and MR, that space used to really be separated, but it seems like it's coming together more closely. How some companies are even merging their departments. Can you talk a little bit about how user experience and market research are starting to really become more synergistic?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, at the heart of both fields is understanding people and providing companies with a perspective on who their customers are, what they need, what they want, where their opportunities are, where they're not being served, right? So both US and market research, and I have a degree in both, actually my master's is in marketing, has been driven to find this information and convey it to their internal teams. Market research had a set of offerings, quant and qual, that in my experience at least, really focused on getting access to people and asking them questions. User experience was more about getting in front of people and observing things. You know, sometimes we ask questions, but at least the way that I was taught, it was very much about observation and behavior and measuring that behavior. And so there's definitely, I think, a convergence of that happening. I think what also is really interesting is there's a divergence where UX is moving quickly into product strategy, where product strategists serve as the UX strategist or senior UX leader. And so this idea of being lean and agile and learning as you go and taking your best guess and tweaking as the timeline progresses, I think is something that has stressed the research community because we tend to like to be thorough and, you know, get our sample size in and really make sure that we have a 360 view of what is happening in the consumer's life. And in my experience, the last couple of years, that's been really hard to sell.
Talk a little bit about your initiative with CInsiderInsights.com, which is really unique.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, so firstly, I tried to do this about 3 years ago and I kept getting it wrong. So what I tried to do about 3 years ago is ask people all around the world to conduct interviews on my behalf, right? So we would have a topic, let's say, around where millennials are not served well in banking. And so the initial idea was let me have researchers all over kind of take my research by, conduct some sessions, and then give me the results. And for a number of reasons, which we can get into if you'd like, it didn't work. And what struck me as one of the most important reasons is that I was just getting what I would get if I had done it. And I think I was looking for more. So we switched from interviews to conversations. And what that meant is that I didn't need a researcher doing the quote interview. I needed people who had access to really cool people that we wanted to study. And those conversations were in two directions, and they went into areas that I didn't even think to ask questions about. And what we learned is that organic ability for two friends or two family members to just have a conversation about a set of topics that we give them led to a different lens that we didn't have in traditional research. Often we heard the same things as traditional research, which was good in my cases for validity and reliability. But in every case since we started doing it, which is about a year now, we've also heard more and different things. So the general concept is that we have a set of insiders who go out and have conversations. These insiders are driven by a desire to find truth and to connect and to understand someone in their life on a deeper level. And so they don't take every project. You know, they're very picky, actually, about the projects that they take on. And they have a conversation where they're allowed to provoke and probe and even offer their own opinion. And then those recordings come back to us for a more traditional kind of synthesis and analysis. And then from there, we actually go back to untraditional and present stories and kind of vignettes of these people's lives back to clients. And I mean, I'm in love with this work. It's fast. It's about 2 weeks from beginning to end. And it's emotional, which I was lacking in some of the research work that I was doing, you know, last year and the year before. Like we would present things and the clients would, it would make rational sense, but this is making people cry. You know, this work is really getting clients to have the empathy that I've been trying to get them to have my entire career. And so that I think is really powerful.
Yeah, so the reason I went down this path instead of just sticking sure. on the user experience is because I think there's some really unique opportunities here to maybe kind of reframe the way research has traditionally been done with this type of approach, looking at the way user experience is measured today. What are some of the takeaways that you see that could really be impacting the research industry moving forward?
So, I mean, I'm not sure if this is going to answer your question, but I, the way I'm seeing it is what we need to change in order to make this move forward. You know, a lot of the struggle that I had in the last 3 years in the R&D part of Insider Insight was getting researchers to get on board with what I was trying to do. You know, this isn't research. It is and it isn't. You know, in my mind, it is because I've always seen research as this, as an input to design. But for a pure researcher, they stick to these rules around what research is, and innovation, therefore, isn't happening. So to move research forward, part of what we need is researchers who are willing to challenge the status quo and rethink what they've known for 20 years, which is a challenge. It's hard for anybody. But I'm finding it is very hard as I've looked to hire people, as I've looked to sell Insider Insight. It doesn't do very well with old school market researchers. It does really well with creative types and people in the research space who know that change is coming and know they need a faster, leaner methodology to get new insights to their product teams.
So, yeah, when I think about user experience, obviously I think about websites, I think about product design. Mm-hmm. Are there some other applications that maybe people are just really missing the boat on?
I mean, so the work that we do, of course, those come in play, but it's actually more cohesive system. So one of my favorite projects is a pill that has a sensor in it. And the sensor transmits to kind of this Band-Aid looking patch, and that transmits to your phone. And your doctor, your caregivers, you all can track the meds that you're taking. And it's really about adherence because this pill is for schizophrenic and bipolar patients. So the user experience in this case is everything from the brochure in the doctor's office to the box that this stuff comes in, to the app to set up, to the doctor's interface, the nurse's interface, which is slightly different, the 911 interface in case I take too many pills. The entire system is what we're designing. You know, so it's offline and online components that come together to create the customer's experience. And most of our projects are you know, something along those lines, where there's a component of offline and then a lot of online, and all of it needs to work together to create a holistic experience that customers love.
Okay, so taking these steps with the user experience, doing some of these great measurements you do, are you tying traditional research in as well? Are you doing anything to kind of merge these two worlds in a creative way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if it's creative, but I definitely do. You know, I think that there's nothing wrong with traditional research. It's actually, when conducted well, it's beautiful. And it really does give that deep look at what we're trying to accomplish before we start designing. So anytime a client has the budget, the time, and the understanding of what traditional research will give, and that's the right fit. We don't try to like sneak in Insider Insight where it doesn't fit. You know, the Insider Insight is it's almost a flow of stories that have the answers to questions you didn't think to ask. So it's a complementary method to traditional research. It doesn't replace much in traditional research, but it gives that extra color, icing, sparkle, whatever metaphor you want to use, to get clients to get that emotional connection to the customers, which is, you know, I do think is a part of my job as a user experience advocate. You know, my job is to make a company care about serving a customer, not just know how to, not just, you know, invest in it, but actually in the blood of the company, as the culture of the company, feel that it's their duty. And so these kinds of innovative techniques are really designed to do that.
We're talking to Mona Patel, UX expert and the CEO of Motivate Design. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Audible Insights is supported by CMix from Critical Mix. CMix is a collaborative new way to create insights from Critical Mix. CMix gives you fast and easy access to survey programming and management, global target audiences and data visualization right at your fingertips, all in one convenient place. Unlike other DIY survey tools, CMix lets you decide how much or how little you want to be involved with your survey project. The Critical Mix team of experts is available to help along every step of the way whenever you need them. Visit cmix.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Audible Insights. I'm your host, Paul Kirch, and we've got Mona Patel, CEO of Motivate Design and UX expert. Let's jump back in. Yeah. Can you share maybe another example or two of some projects that have really inspired you lately that you're seeing some exciting opportunities in this field?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, so on the Insider Insights side, that's what I've been doing for the past year. Personally, so some of my favorite projects, there was one that we did with Ad Council, which we're allowed to talk about, where they had already done focus groups to understand why people don't get screened for Alzheimer's. And what they had found was very deep, you know, that people didn't know that there was a screening. And among a bunch of other things, if they'd known kind of what it is, where to go, how long it would take, whether insurance covers it, that they would consider getting screened. And so the current strategy when we had walked in was around awareness. And we had offered to do an insider insight project. This is very early on to just see if we found the same thing. And so we deployed just a 10 conversation small trial, which is how we approach almost all of our first projects. We just want clients to have a taste of it. And what we found is, of course, that people didn't know that there was a screening, but it got deeper. You know, it got to, you know, a grandmother and a grandson talking about how Alzheimer's runs in their family. And she really just didn't want to know, you know, because Alzheimer's is, it's a death sentence. And by knowing, she would know that she's going to die in a way or die in terms of her life. And so it was just a very deep understanding of, even if we gave her, you know, a little spec sheet that told her everything about what this screening was, she's not going. You know, that's not something that she's interested in finding out right now. She doesn't want to know that she's going to be a burden to her family. She doesn't want to know that she'll slowly start to lose her memory. And that was so powerful for us. But again, equally powerful was the presentation of this, where it's not so dry, even the way I'm saying it. It was presented in a story of this person's life. And so when we take that back, the stories are really powerful. And we all know this, storytelling is having a huge moment, you know, right now, because of its power and its ability to convince and convey, and really the power of a story is that it can't be untold, a really good one. And so that changes strategy. So that's one of my favorites.
And I have to touch on that. That's so powerful to hear that. And you know,
I'm polar opposite
of that. I'm the guy who has a cold and goes out and self-diagnoses online and thinks I am dying. But but in all seriousness, to hear that story,
yeah. I mean,
to hear, you know, that's what you're able to pull from that and build a story around that. I want to let you continue, but I do want to tap into how storytelling is really kind of changing things. So go ahead, and you had another example.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about that other project, and all of them actually, is that all of these are done in 2 weeks. And so, you know, to be able to confirm what they found in the focus group and then also get to this level so quickly keeps people seeing the value of doing this kind of research. You know, it was hard for us to take a 6-week schedule. You know, things were already moving before. Other fun ones, I'll keep it lighter than that. One was around membership. And instead of studying membership, so let's just pretend that, you know, we can't talk about who this client is, but let's just say it's an airline that wants to study why you're a member of that airline. We instead, and like I said, with the insiders, they need to care about the topic that we're asking. So we actually translated that to relationships and what makes a great relationship, because a membership is a type of relationship, and what doesn't. And it was fascinating to hear quickly how people talked about relationships with their mother, relationships with New York City, relationships with a brand, and how, where and how there were overlaps between those. And again, these are opening up questions for the client that they didn't think to ask. I think that's one of the most powerful things about what we're doing, is that there's some answers, but the value is really a better question. There's one that we're presenting on Monday, which is, it's one of my favorites so far. When people travel, why do they want to do what they're familiar with when they're in an unfamiliar place? Like, if you think about, like, in New York, so many people make reservations at Fridays. It's like, but you're in New York. You're visiting New York. You know, why are you going to TGI Fridays? And there's something really beautiful about feeling safe, you know, in an uncomfortable place, and that balance, and how to, if you're a travel company, how do you encourage slowly people to come out of that safe space and try something new. And so that's a really cool one in the travel space. So all of them are really all over the place, which probably is my fault, because I like to do things all over the place. But they're really starting to point to the things that are happening in life that we may not have access to, you know, when you call somebody in on a Tuesday afternoon for a focus group. It's like what they talk about at 11 with their life partner. It's the fight that they have with their mother. You know, we're digging into these kinds of things about money and the responsibility that a person has when their parent is aging in home. And the aging in home one was a really huge one for us too, just to hear, you know, the guilt that kids feel, kids meaning us, you know, when our parents are aging in home, and where we think our responsibility starts and stops, and how that doesn't always align with where a parent, an elderly parent, believes the responsibility starts and stops. So we're really kind of digging into all these things for brands who need to know this as they develop products, services, and brands and other brands to support it.
Okay, so I mentioned that I wanted to talk a little bit about storytelling. I don't want to get too bogged down with this, but you know, storytelling has predominantly been used often, I guess, most cases in qualitative research, and because you have more of a, you know, touchy-feely type of environment, you have the opportunity to connect maybe more emotionally, like you're talking about the research you're doing. Sounds like it's more of a qualitative nature, but are there some takeaways that quantitative researchers can take away from the idea of storytelling and how they can maybe do a better job of telling stories with the data? Because I think that's a missed opportunity.
You know, I mean, most of our work is qualitative because it's more design research. But with the quant work, what we have done, because a lot of times our clients will want to know, well, how prevalent is this, you know, is this story that you found, is this need that you found in the larger market? And so what we've been doing is this qual-quant combo, where the stories are still being told, and then we use the numbers to anchor, ground, give confidence to the story, and saying, now if you ask, you know, here's what people are saying. And this we did, for example, with the Ad Council one. We had some quant work that complemented what we were saying, so that they could see, like, this is not just a random, you know, grandmother, grandson conversation, but when they revealed, you know, I actually don't want to know, we were able to go back with quant and really show, you know, when you ask it this way, they admit, you're right, I really don't want to know. And so we've been kind of doing it as a combination. With just quant, I think, though, there's a really interesting opportunity to bring numbers to life. A lot of times we use numbers in quant, at least, to ground and to provide information. But sometimes what I've been doing with quant only is make it more of a game, where, you know, before I present a number, let's just say it's 75%, you know, believe this, I engage with the audience to say, what do you think the percentage is? Okay, it's 60. And what does that mean? And if it was more, what would that mean? And if it was less, what would that mean? Okay, the number 75. You know, and so that dialogue and that two-way communication gets them to kind of buy in to the number and care about the number, and also just memory and recall, remember the number more than presenting it.
Yeah, I think quant researchers often have a struggle within corporations on how to better serve their people, give them the tools to sell their research up inside the food chain of their own organization. And if we can teach them or show them a story related to the data, I think that's maybe a way of solving that issue and making that more powerful for everyone.
You know, it's a bit meta, but I would love quant in-house researchers to think as a UX person. I think often, if I can be so bold and hopefully not offensive, I would say that we get into a rut of just putting it into a format that's easy for us. You know, we pull the last report that we did, we pull a template, and that's not user-centered.
Well, after that years of doing it, it's often about getting the job done, right? Instead of actually finding creative ways to present it. So absolutely.
So yeah, would you buy from a brand that did that for you as a consumer? You know, that didn't take the time to think about what do you need and how do you need to see it and how do you need to present it? That didn't take the time to create a cool Super Bowl ad and just kind of did it the same way every single time. You know, it's like we want brands to do this for us, so we should do it for our senior leadership.
Absolutely. Hey, so as we're wrapping up here, Mara, this is great. I really appreciate your perspective. Now, you do have a book that was quite successful, Reframe, Shift the Way You Work, Innovate and Think. I know in that there was an 8-step process that really taught companies how they could do a better job of innovating and thinking through processes. But that book was very successful for you, and it's been well-received. But you have another book coming out, and I want to see if you can give us a little bit of a sneak teaser on what's to come.
Yes, I would love to. Actually, I'm hoping to get it up on pre-order by next week. It's deceptive. It looks like a kid's book, but when you hear the story, I think you'll see that it's not. It's an elephant that goes to a playground, sits on a swing, and breaks it. And instead of feeling sulky and sorry for herself, she decides she's going to redesign that swing. So she comes up with all of these what-if ideas on how she would redesign the swing, has her friends there, and there's a skunk. Let's call him stakeholder skunk. The entire time he says, we can't do that. You know, we can't do that. That would cost too much money. We can't do that. We don't have the budget for it. We can't do that. It would take too much time. And Ava, the elephant, keeps coming up with these ideas, and the skunk keeps saying no. And actually, the story was originally that when I wrote it 2 or 3 years ago, and it was meant to bring the reframe message down to kids. But then I did two things. One is I actually stopped making it a kid book. I think it's just a really easy read, similar to like Who Moves My Cheese. It's just a really easy read to get the point of reframing. But the other is I added a character, which is an orangutan, that just does it. You know, rather than talking about it and coming up with what ifs, and rather than saying no, the orangutan just puts, you know, his sweat into it and comes up with a prototype. And maybe it's going to be awful. And actually in the book it is. But he doesn't care. You know, he just figures, let's just try it and see what happens. And in trying it, he's the one who actually builds the most creative muscle. So it's an evolution of reframe in the sense that reframe is really all about still that lofty, ask all these what if questions and come up with ideas. And my personal journey has taught me you can come up with a lot of ideas, which is great and really helpful and does get people unstuck. But sometimes just doing it and failing can be better than all those ideas. And so that should be launching soon. It's a really cute story. It's how I told my kids what reframe was. It's been doing well, mainly with corporations, to be honest, like where they just say, you know, give this to my entire team so that we're all on the same page.
Well, it just goes to show that there's more value in taking action than sitting around thinking all the time. I mean, obviously thinking has its purpose, but if we don't take action, what's the point, right?
That's it. And the proceeds all go to a really great charity, eSchool for Girls, which is an entrepreneurship school here in New York for low-income girls, where these women apply. They're about 18 through 20, maybe even younger. And, you know, they have no real interest in being entrepreneurs or really doing anything with their life. And in the end of 2 weeks, they're excited about at least going to college and starting a company. So it's a beautiful charity. And so the proceeds will go to that.
That's amazing. Mona Patel, thank you so much for coming on Audible Insights. Can you tell people how they can learn more about you?
Yes, absolutely. So I've been challenged actually for 90 days to post on Instagram. So that's probably going to be the best way. It's Mona K. Patel. I'm on LinkedIn. I love to connect to people there and hear about what's going on. And then of course, motivatedesign.com is the company name.
Mona Patel, thanks for being on Audible Insights. Really appreciate Mona coming on. During the recording of this show, her book had not been released, but now it's actually out and available. So make sure you go out and get yourself a copy. We really appreciate Mona coming on and sharing her perspective on how UX is making an impact. Thanks again, Mona, for being on the show. Once again, my name is Paul Kirch, host of Audible Insights, and I want to pay a special thanks to the Insights Association. Through this show and other means like the insightsassociation.org, you're going to find a lot of ways that they are advancing the insights and research industries. So we thank them for all their contributions and everything they do. And if you want to learn a little more about me, check out my other show, Boss Academy Radio, at bossacademy.com, where we focus on real business ownership success strategies. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have an amazing day.
Thanks for listening to Audible Insights, a production of the Insights Association. We empower intelligent business decisions through our support of the marketing research and analytics community. Learn more about our advocacy code of standards, education, certification, and the many services we provide to businesses and professionals at insightsassociation.org. And if you'd like to reach out to Paul Kirch directly, email him at paul@websitesandleads.com. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have an insightful day.